Hello and welcome back to yet another episode of the VCpreneur podcast, a podcast that provides a unique perspective of the startup world through the lens of venture capitalists and entrepreneurs. I'm your host Digjay, and today I have with me Vishesh Khurana, co-founder at ShipRocket. ShipRocket is a logistics enablement platform that offers SaaS solutions to online sellers and D2C brands for aggregating and choosing the best logistics partner to ship their e-commerce orders. The company is backed by marquee investors like Lightrock, Temasek, Zomato, Bertelsmann, Move Strategic Ventures, March Venture Capital, and PayPal, among others. In this episode, Vishesh talks about his background and path leading up to ShipRocket, macro tailwinds that shaped ShipRocket's evolution and its current product stack, challenges faced when scaling up, empowering leaders and people management at ShipRocket, the company's inorganic growth playbook, fundraising journey, and value add from investors. I had a great time talking to Vishesh on this podcast, and I hope you enjoy this conversation too. So, without much ado, let's jump in and find out what Vishesh has to share. Hey Vishesh, welcome to the VCpreneur podcast. Thank you so much for taking out the time today.
Thank you for having me. It's good to be here.
Awesome. So Vishesh, you know, before we talk about ShipRocket, for those who don't know you, maybe we can start with a, you know, brief background about yourself and, you know, tell us about your path leading up to ShipRocket.
Sure. So a quick one. I think I'm one of the founders at ShipRocket. This is the third attempt at entrepreneurship. My first company was into mobile applications, which I started when I was 19. In 2010, probably, right about that time. And then that company, we got an opportunity to exit. There was an acquisition offer. We took it and I moved on to e-commerce as the next, because in 2010 and 11 in India, e-commerce was the next big thing happening at the time. Flipkart, Snapdeal just made a little bit bigger. The venture funding ecosystem was maturing. So it seemed like an opportunity. And I started my own e-commerce company, which was a fashion retailing marketplace in those days. But of course, very early and small market, high competition, multiple reasons led to a failure. That did not work. But that also taught me the challenges in India of starting an e-commerce business. For someone like me who has had one stint started a tech business, it was even super hard for me. And that's where we started exploring how can we make this better. And I met my co-founders today, Sahil and Gautam, during those days. Idea in the they were actually already doing something around this. They were trying to do a Shopify-like platform in India. And that's how we got together. Actually, I met them as a customer. I ended up meeting them to get some websites made. And they just got talking and I understood what they were trying to do. And there was some alignment and synergies. And we decided to do this together. And that's how the first product in this company, which is Bigfoot as a company, came together. This was Shopify for India.
Which year was this again?
This was 2012, October.
Still very early for its time and before the real e-commerce boom.
Yeah. So it was very early. We were early in the... And that was the whole beauty around it because the knowledge was so limited. There was... Shopify was not in India. At 2012, India did not have many platforms, plug-and-play platforms, where people could just go and do their own website. And DIY anyways wasn't a thing in India. It still is limited. It's still not there. I would still say that. But no one will go and just sign up and build their own website, no matter how easy it is. If we are still a country where people want to get things done versus do it themselves. So Carpet, it came together where we were building websites on a SaaS model. It was a SaaS business where we were charging fixed flat fee monthly and we were building websites. So problem one solved, where we were now giving people a cheap e-commerce solution to get online. That was problem one. The learnings that came post that, after talking to our customers only, they shared that now that the website is easy, we still are facing challenges from the other aspects of e-commerce business, that is payments and logistics. And we said, again, to find a solution for that. And that's how the other product, I'm just giving a very, very short version, but that's how the other product came together, where we first attempt at solving logistics, what ShipRocket is today, actually ShipRocket started back then as a supporting product to my customers, where we got together five e-commerce delivery partners on one platform, integrated them and gave it to our customers as one single platform. That was the first thing, but we never built it like an independent business. It was always a product within the business. And it was there for years till 2016-17. It had its own small life. But in 16-17, logistics, just as e-commerce became very, very big, the problem around logistics was bigger than ever. And that's where multiple things led to us taking a call of saying that we want to focus on this product only, because this has a much better product market fit than the other products. And that's how ShipRocket came around in 2017, somewhere, where we rewrote the entire technology and relaunched it as an independent product and as a business, which it is today.
Understood. I think it gives us that sense that the DNA of the company from the very beginning has been, you know, try different things, figure out what's working, and try and go deeper. In a lot of ways, progressive discovery, which I think, you know, is important for a lot of businesses to be able to create that moat and sustain for the long term. And we'll talk about that, you know, in detail going forward. So you mentioned, you know, you listened to your customers, and that's how you started, you know, iterating and finding out what are the other solutions you could solve for. If you could give a sense of how the macro backdrop was developing that you think helped more customers to adopt ShipRocket, yeah, and, you know, attracted them to using your platform.
See, to understand the macro, we have to understand the problem, what was the situation in those days, right? New age delivery companies did not start yet. We were working in an environment where there were, let's say, Blue Dart, Aramex, FedEx, some international companies which had operations in India. And e-commerce for them was a very small, because it was a courier business, right? E-commerce, online shipment business wasn't as important back then. So the offering to customers, it was kind of a chicken and egg problem, where in those days, if you wanted to have a contract with Blue Dart, you had to give a minimum billing guarantee monthly. For them to be worth it to come to your place every day to pick up shipments, there had to be some minimum guarantees around it. For a customer who is just starting an online business, it wasn't easy to commit to a certain billing number without knowing where the business is going to head. So that was just one problem. The other is the commercials. Without having the right volumes, they would never have got the right commercials. And if they did not have the right commercials, they would never get to the right volume. So you were always in that loop of problems where, how do I solve this? To get commercials, I need volumes. And for volumes, I need to have at least stable bottom lines, and that won't come if the shipping cost is way too heavy.
Correct.
These few problems are very simplest problems to solve. So aggregation helped us solve. And from the courier point of view also, I understand where they were coming from. They were running a hard on-ground operation. For them to actually sustain and, you know, make sense of the cost around going to pick up an order, it has to be fair for them also. It was a both side problem. So we entered saying that we will aggregate, let's say, 100 customers with 1,000 orders a month for you to make at least 1 million orders pipeline, just to give them some security around volumes and minimum guarantees. Now it becomes, for them, it's easier to deal with one customer and not deal with the overhead cost of managing 1,000 customers. On the other hand, we had built some technologies to deal with customer support issues for 1,000 customers. So we were acting better for both sides, where you were aggregating volume into one company, which became one of those USPs. And as we matured, we again took our DNA saying that let's talk to the customers, what are the other issues? And we kept on listing and innovating around those issues in logistics. So weight issues, NDR issues, there's weight discrepancies, who will solve that? There is failed deliveries, who will solve that? So all the other products, which is a stack of ShipRocket today, came around the problems around supply chain. Those were happening. So automatic calling, communication, tracking, beautiful tracking pages. As a logistics company, that was not a part of. So if you know, if you go to today, even FedEx website today and try to track your parcel, it is functional, but it is not branded. You would see some text around it and you'll get your status. It's not like it works. But it's not a thing that a brand wants to. While they have built a beautiful website, they want to match up to those levels, right? So now those products came handy. So we kept on developing as the requirements came in, and which became the stack today.
Got it. So we spoke about, you know, the initiation and how you all started ShipRocket and what was the approach in terms of evolution. Fast forward today, how does the ShipRocket stack look? What are the key bottlenecks, you know, that you're trying to solve in today's market, especially when India's e-commerce share has grown substantially over the last 5 years? You know, how do you look at that scenario today from ShipRocket's perspective?
ShipRocket today is a mix of few companies that we have acquired and a couple of products that we have built. The end goal, how we look at our business is, if as an individual, you want to start an online business, you should be able to do that with just a laptop and no people. So all you need to run an e-commerce business in this country, it should be as easy as sitting in the room and having a laptop. So let's break down the components involved. For an e-commerce business, the component one is what to sell. Data around what selling, those kind of things, right? We have an engine to now come up with trends of hot selling, categories and other things. So we can give you some answers around it. But what is the category you should be selecting? Now coming forward, sourcing. Where should I get these products manufactured, or where should I buy these at wholesale? So we want to build a network of wholesalers, manufacturers on the back end who can do this for you. Now, once the product is manufactured, where do I keep them? We have a warehousing unit, which is called ShipRocket Warehousing. So you can now store your products across my 50, 70 warehouses all over the country. So you can eventually do same-day deliveries. So from wherever the order comes in, if you have your products across hot pockets, we will pick up from the nearest warehouse and deliver same day, because that is also as important as it is today in logistics, getting there early. Now, return management. Again, it is my warehouse. If there are returns coming back, I will do the refurbishment. I will do everything. Now, coming to conversion, how do I get more orders? We acquired a company called Vidzo, which is a conversion optimization tool, which is helping you get more orders. Now, what is, once you have received an order, the whole post-order experience, that is the stack of ShipRocket, the tracking page, the communications, the SMS, the WhatsApp, all the workflows that happen in terms of field deliveries, reattempts. So those are managed by getting to the level of omni-channel. So we acquired a company called Omni, which is an omni-channel solution. So now that you are scaling, you want to have your products not just online, but also some of the offline stores. Making sure it all works in one sync to have your products across and somebody can buy it offline, online, it's the same thing. So there's that stack available as well. And lastly, there are tech products like a WhatsApp CRM, where you can engage with your customers on a WhatsApp. There is checkout. We can give you one-click checkout. There is a buy now, pay later stack, where you can just enter your mobile number and done. You are done with your order and we take care of the thing. The stack now is almost everything like a business in a box, which happens in one single company.
Got it. You explained the stack very well. And if you look at, you know, today's market, especially specifically focusing on India, over the life cycle of scaling up an e-commerce business, where do you see, you know, the biggest bottleneck today? And I'm assuming that's also going to be a key focus area for ShipRocket today.
I think the biggest bottleneck for someone to break that glass ceiling and have that scale is around alternate demand. Because having to depend on the traditional digital channels and making sure you're only digital advertisements will not get your business after a point. You can acquire your early sets, you can scale up to an X, but there will always be a stage where your investment in your online advertisement and your returns, the ROI will stop being optimized. That stage will come. I think that is the biggest bottleneck. To have an alternate demand ecosystem will become a very, very important area. For example, we are also trying to work around those. So influencer marketing, other kind of partnership plays, that how do you get alternate demand? So social influence, all these new age kind of things, right? Where you can get demand, partnerships. India has ONDC, get demands, banking partnerships. You need to get out there to get more demand, because after a point, Instagram, Facebook, these things will not be as optimized as it were in your scaling days.
Yeah, and it's not going to be sustainable as well. And, you know, in the current environment that we are in, you know, again, capital has become so critical. It's not free anymore. You need to work hard and, you know, build a resilient, sustainable business. So absolutely agree with your point there. You know, alternate demand is going to be the key, and how you can be efficient and creative around it, kind of lay the foundation to scale that online business that you're building. which is very helpful, you know, to set the context. I want to now, you know, talk about the venture building aspect and some of the challenges, you know, that you go through when you're scaling an org. And especially when you're going after trying to solve the complete life cycle, you know, of a business, your focus and attention gets, you know, divided into, you know, multiple things that you're trying to build at the same time. So in some ways, that's a hyper growth phase that, you know, any company has to go through, you know, to be able to get to that level and to operate at scale. Want to understand, you know, from your perspective, last 3-4 years, what has got difficult with time as you have scaled the company, as you have scaled the business, and what are some things that you think have got easier, you know, as you've, if there are any, as you've scaled the business?
So obviously nothing gets easier, but of course in our journey, and I can be specific to our journey, I think the biggest challenge that we faced was we did not have a right comparable. A lot of venture industry in this country works on a global comparative in terms of something that has scaled somewhere. So from what we were trying to do, obviously was a very, very unique problem, which was unique to our country. And yeah, the solution was also fairly unique. While we are a tech company, we also have a lot of people, which is also a lot of operations involved. So how do you make sure that, how do you explain that? Was of course a larger part of our issue, where how do you explain why in your fundraising journey or anything, how do you explain that to an enterprise? Why do you need this optimization? For many people, it's like, it's working, it's not broken, but it can be better. Those are the things I think we did have to go through a learning curve, where we'll have to do a lot more awareness around this is a real problem. We are solving it. We are solving it in a capital efficient fashion. It is not a cash guzzling business. We do not need a lot of capital, because end of the day, we are also in the arbitrage play. It's purely the mix of both things, right? The more the scale, I will always be in the middle till I'm charging more than I'm getting. The problem is around explaining a business model. How do you explain a tech company? Why does a tech company have hundreds of people? Those kind of questions you need to answer, because it is a unique way of doing business in this country. It is not straightforward. So yeah, I think that was one. The other was around SMBs, right? SMBs in this country are really very, very sensitive around pricing of anything. How do you get them to pay for a technology? Of course, it also had to go through full awareness and a learning curve, where why should they have a software for things that they can have an individual do it? To explain how do you scale this business, how do you optimize, how do you monitor everything, you need some tool. It cannot be a stack of receipts that you have on your table to track everything. So getting there, of course, it was a lot of back and forth around awareness. So yeah, those were our challenges. But I think luckily for us, we were closer, and unfortunately for everyone, for the world, but COVID did give a lot of boost. It just got a lot of people to shop online. It was a bigger shift for good. People who did not try it even before once, who had to try it, now they have tried it. They know the convenience of it. They trust the system. They know if I order something online, it will come. India had that problem, right? People did not believe on independent, unique website saying, why should I pay online on this website? I don't even know if this my money or my product will come ever. You had trust issues, and they still are. So, but people did get around it. Because they were pushed to order online. Now, once they know the convenience and the availability and the options, so many things that you can get under single, it did help a lot in terms of getting that ball rolling, for sure.
Right. And, you know, Vishesh, of course, there's competition that has gone up on the service delivery side. You know, as e-commerce, like you said, the tailwinds were there, the market has grown, and there are players, specialized players working across the life cycle. ShipRocket is operating across the life cycle, but you have specialized competitors across specific stages of that life cycle of an online business. So what has been your approach, you know, to competition, especially when you have market tailwinds and, you know, there's a big market out there to capture. And also with regards to bigger names, you know, like Shopify, Amazon, which have unreasonably strong distribution advantage and mindshare advantage amongst anyone who's using e-commerce.
Actually, competition reality is we are almost in a place where we are partners to everyone. We aren't really direct competitors to anyone. We are in a position, we are building this ecosystem with everyone. So for logistics providers also, from our point of view, we have to innovate, of course, to be relevant. You can't just have one problem that I've solved one problem and I can just be there now. It is very, very important to continue innovating. Like I said, we keep on listening to our customers. The stack keeps evolving. And we also, I am very aware of the fact that the problem we have solved or till last 4 or 5 years is no more a problem today because we have solved it. So it is done, right? We need to go and look out for the bigger problems, right? The good part is once you are dealing with long tail of the country and once you have cracked that, it's not just one product they use, right? There's a whole stack they use to run an operation. So you keep on entering wherever possible. So for me, it's always about being, for the bigger the shop, bigger Shopify gets, we grow because Shopify customers use ShipRocket. So it's about working with them rather having any competition. For Amazon also, when Amazon started their own logistics network, Amazon Transportation Services, we onboarded them as partner on platform. So people get access to Amazon's logistics services through our platform as well. Just trying to find all these partnerships and working together, it's a large market. I don't see any competitive problems yet and a lot of problems to solve.
I think that makes sense. And, you know, that actually positions ShipRocket in a unique place where there are specialized players who are trying to serve the customer directly, whereas ShipRocket is trying to be that platform of choice and that platform where you can come and cater to all your needs and choose from, you know, what service delivery or what service partner do you really want to go forward with. Vishal, I also want to focus on the, you know, people aspect. You know, as you scale the org, trying to retain the same quality of the people gets more and more difficult as you're scaling. What has been ShipRocket's DNA in terms of people? And if you can talk about some of the challenges as you've scaled the org.
I think the best thing we did and which did work for us was hiring leadership before hiring a lot of people, because when there is many people unmanaged, it becomes a problem, right? We were lucky. I would like to say that word because it is not easy to get the right leadership, the right talent. We were lucky to have found people who we can relate to, who we can work with, and you know, they all are equally passionate about. Not just founders are passionate. The entire leadership is equally passionate about what we are building together. So that did help us because now the leaders took over the charge of building teams under them. It is not a team we were forced upon. They were given a chance to hire their own people. That worked for us. I think beautifully that culture, that whole DNA worked for us, because the other approach was there are 100 people and then you hire a manager to manage them, which we have tried, which did not work for us because suddenly there are misfits. My hiring is a different kind versus yours. There are different kind of expectations from people that you might have that I might have. So giving that flexibility of first onboarding a leader and then let him build his own org did work for us. And it's still the same culture.
Yeah, I think just giving that ownership, like you said, to those leaders to build their own team and to run with it, I think inherently shows results, you know, versus trying to just hire people and throwing people to a problem that you're trying to solve.
Yeah.
Vishesh, you mentioned, you know, you've gone through multiple acquisitions and that's how you've also built the entire stack and built the platform as you've evolved. And of course, there are challenges when it comes to pursuing organic growth. I want to, you know, talk about two things specifically. One, about just the timing aspect, you know, how do you decide this is the right time to pursue an inorganic growth opportunity? And then, of course, second comes, you know, how do you integrate and how do you make it a smooth transition? So if you could talk about, you know, those two aspects with regards to acquisitions, that'd be really helpful.
Sure. So I think our acquisition strategy was very, very clear. And the timing around it also was very clear to us. And you need to find your own product market fit first. So once we had that confidence saying that now ShipRocket has found its product market fit, it is growing at the pace that it needs to grow. It is a sustainable, it has low churn. You need to win one business completely before you start hitting out on acquisitions. Because you already have one product that you need to figure out and then you acquire 10 more to figure out. It just becomes a mess, right? So you need to have super clear saying that my product is done. I have the right leader to run that product. My business is growing and we have a path to grow this. And there are challenges. Less challenges now. Only then you need to go. What I believe, I think as founders need to get there. Whenever the acquisition play comes in, You need to be there because you need to make sure the cultures are integrated. You need to ensure the right people are integrated. You need to make sure the strategies and the goals are integrated.
Yeah.
Both of us should be aligned for the single point vision. Those things, I think we had to take over. So the timing aspect was, of course, once we found the right leader to keep the ship running without any disturbances, and then you figure out what you need as a business. So our acquisition strategy was not to grow ShipRocket. The aggregation business of ShipRocket was growing. It's running in an independent, isolated system. So it is not to acquire companies to grow that business. That was not the case. For us, like we said, we are an ecosystem player. We are plugging everything that a e-commerce SMB needs. Now, what else will he need? So shipping is one piece of it. Like we said, now you go upstream or downstream. He will need a marketing tool like we identified. You cannot build it. You cannot build a marketing tool overnight. You can, but it will take time. Now that you want to go on a flash growth concept, then you go back and say, okay, let's find those technologies that we can distribute. So I have these SMBs. There are 100,000 SMBs on my platform. What else can I sell them? So then you go back and find those kind of companies, and obviously the founders matter, right? That is super important. Once you find that, that was our acquisition strategy. Things that we can grow 3-4x very, very quickly by just leveraging on our distribution system. Those were our companies. That's what we did. On the merger aspect, again, the same thing. You don't try and integrate a lot of things the second you acquire. I think it's also a journey where once the company is working with you, you need to give them their own independent space to grow. Once they try and hit a certain, you give them help. But once they try and hit those ceilings, then you try and figure out a way to do this collaboratively. I think we are still giving it time. All of our acquisitions are independent business unit in itself. And we are just giving them their own spaces and their own, let them execute how they were executing, just giving them the right help they need. That's about it. That's where the whole play comes in around making sure you get the right founder. 80% of any acquisition, there's nothing else. Because once you align, if he has a certain traction, if we can work together and make it 3-4x, only then it makes sense to work together. Else you can just be in your own systems, right? So it is very important who you are working with, because without the founder, any acquisition is not worth it. We are not as big when companies can just acquire products and say, we'll just take care of it. We need to ensure that we are only a supporting function for you. We have a distribution system. We can eliminate the CAC from your business. And once the CAC goes away, now it has to make financial sense. The product needs to generate a lot of revenue and high margin revenue, because we took away a very large portion of your business cost from your business that was CAC. So that synergy has to be. For we are only trying to find businesses where we can eliminate CAC, we can eliminate cost of service, and we can just say, okay, your product fits into my customers, and the same ecosystem of support can help them with both the products. And just now, all you have to do is keep innovating, keep building new features, and we will take care of everything else. So that theory around acquisitions worked for us.
I think that answer, you know, shows a lot of clarity of just thinking and execution that you've done, and, you know, doing 5 or 6, whatever size the acquisition is, but just doing those acquisitions and being able to integrate them in a seamless manner is definitely a task, especially when you're embedding those businesses, you know, into your core stack. It's not just like you mentioned earlier, you know, you're investing and then you let them just be independent. It's going to be ultimately come within the ShipRocket ecosystem. You have to take a lot of effort to nurture it and to make it a seamless transition into the ShipRocket ecosystem. Vishesh, want to switch gears here and talk about, you know, the fundraising journey at ShipRocket. You all have a very interesting mix of investors, not just, you know, pure play investors, but also strategics, you know, that have invested in the company. You know, if you could share, how do you look at these two different set of investors and how are you trying to leverage them as you scale ShipRocket?
I mentioned this earlier in our conversation, is ShipRocket is not a very high capital intensive business. So we did not ever need a lot of cash. So our journey on fundraisers was never directed towards getting most cash in. I think the strategically or tactically, whatever you want to call it, our objective around fundraisers was getting the right help and the right partners. So each stage when we have raised money, we have actually focused upon the individual who we are raising from, than what fund it is, than what valuation it is, than what anything else. I think it is the individual who we will work with, which has to be the utmost importance than whatever else. Other things don't matter around it. So, and that has worked for us. So each of our investors who joined us in whatever stage of our journey did play a very, very vital role in taking us to our next stage. And of course, fundraisers are also a function of value realization, where investors, we need to drive values, we need to make sure that people, angels and everything, people who have been with us also have to realize their values. So those are our fundraising aspects. But ShipRocket as a business, we were never raising money that we need money to scale. This is not a business where I can invest $10 million next month and grow $100 million. It is not that. It has to happen at its own pace. There is no, I cannot just run an ad with Virat Kohli and say, my orders will start going in. It is not going to happen. So it's a B2B business. It will onboarding and natural progression. But that's not there. On this mix of investors around strategic versus financial, I think we treat all of our investors as strategic because they are actually working with us to take us there. On specific strategic, if you want to talk about Zomato, I think there is a synergy of what both companies can do together.
Yeah.
The only reason of investment will happen if there is a plan around it. So there is a plan that we will eventually release. But it is not completely cash driven. I think there is some synergy that we both companies see of working together sometime in the near future. And that's where partnership comes in.
No, I think that helps, and it also shows a lot of clarity in terms of, you know, you understand what kind of business model you are in and what kind of growth you're going to achieve going forward. And that kind of feeds into what your fundraising strategy is and what kind of partners you're looking for. So I think that's that clarity for any founder who's, you know, raising funds is so important. I want to just double click on if you can cite specific examples, you know, of investors that have helped you on specific occasions where you thought, you know, that was a real value add and it really helped having that investor by your side at the time.
I would specifically like to call out one of our investors, which was Nirvana Capital and Rajan Mehra, who joined us in 2014.
Mm-hmm.
What he did, each one of our investors taught us how to think for the next stage, how to, for example, Rajan played a vital role in teaching us around how to build a compliant, high governance company, which is ready for scale. He played a vital role in making sure that there is right people hired at the right stage. You know, just very small advices that come along throughout the journey. Who has seen this? He had his own share of, he was a founder at Bazi, eBay. See, there's a lot of experience that comes along. And if someone is willing to share his experience in your journey, helps a lot. There were a lot of times where that value was added in mentorship and advisory. It's not the money that mattered, I think. It was that advisory. And everyone that followed in the future subsequent rounds. Bertelsmann is very, very attached in terms of, you know, making sure to introduce us to the right people, making sure they operate in terms of monitoring the business, giving us advices on where the numbers are going wrong. They have right people to analyze this business. So everyone had their own areas to help us, and specifically around making sure that how to think big and making sure you do not go crazy while thinking big is keeping it right. Everyone played their own vital role there.
Yeah, well, there's situations, like you said, you know, the business has evolved from when the investors invested and, you know, the model that they were investing in. I'm sure there were periods where there were difficult times or difficult decisions that you were taking as a business. If you could talk about, you know, the investors' perspective at that point and how did they navigate and, you know, go through that phase, because it can be a tricky situation. Investors sometimes can be rigid that, you know, this is what we invested in and this is what we think the company should be. So how did you navigate that tricky situation?
That was a real test. I think when we say we chose the right people, it showed in our difficult times, because when we were going through our pivots, I think the realization, even when we had a situation around cash, I think our investors stood by us. They had the same belief. They understood the product, why we are pivoting, what we are building. And even when we needed cash with no certainty, and we were already going through one product and there was a area where we were, the product did not work, they still invested more cash in the business at that stage where they already had a loan already at stake. And same folks, they all came in and no one actually came with the pressure or any kind of demotivating or questioning aspect. All of, I think we were very lucky and blessed to have the right set of people. Each of our investors supported us in those times, and they stood by us. They made sure, and they even told us that it doesn't matter. We were very, very clear about the fact that we still believe that you can figure it out and we are there with you. So imagine folks have been with us since 15, like 6, 7 years on our cap table. We have been working together for years, and that long, you actually, that shows how much belief they have in the business and investors' point of view, right? They have a fiduciary responsibility toward their LPs as well. So for them to take the right call is very, very important, and they need to be very, very sharp around what call are they taking. This cannot be a relationship thing. It has to be a pure strategy and a very thought through thing, because their responsibilities are both ends. While they have to stand by an entrepreneur, they also have to stand by their LPs, which they are responsible to. So it's, for them, it's a very difficult situation. And for an individual to stand by you in those times is actually a very, very long-term partnership.
Yeah, I think it's a classic playbook and a lot of things to, you know, take away from Shiprocket's fundraising journey. Of course, like you mentioned, the trust in the people and over-indexing on the people who are investing in you and not the big brand name or the fund. And I think it also, you know, speaks volumes about the founders, right? An investor will stand by you in tough times only because they believe in the founder. The communication is very good. Keeping investors informed or keeping them feel involved in the entire growth journey. I think it also feeds into how much trust the investor can build on the founders as well. So I'm sure Shiprocket has done that quite well for, you know, for investors to be able to hold on to the gap table for that long and through the pivots that you mentioned. Okay, Vishesh, you know, moving on, you've seen the evolution of e-commerce in India, and now you're also seeing a lot of Indian e-commerce players trying to, you know, build for the world or try to sell for the world. In that regard, you know, how is Shiprocket thinking about those global expansion plans, if any, at this point?
As a platform, I think we are a very, very India-specific designed business. While we are experimenting with some of our technology products globally, we are live in a few countries. Some experiments happening, but I think the core focus and the belief is it's not that the market here is done. I think going global has to be two things. One, you think your TAM here and it's limited, and the other is you actually see that you can make more margins in some other geography versus your own country using the same technology. I think for both these reasons, I think the macro economics are in our favor. I think the TAM is not done yet. It's a very, very large market here. So for us, while we are trying to do is India selling globally, so we are enabling our sellers to sell across the world by giving those supply chain solutions, which is already in place, where we can help you now ship not just all over India, but globally as well, any country in the world. So those product stuff is working. So we are actually doing using that as our expansion tactic, helping our own sellers sell across the world.
Understood. So yeah, the core focus still is Indian sellers and trying to help them and enable them to, you know, sell not just in India, but also outside. All right, Vishesh, you know, one penultimate question before we jump into the rapid fire. And I like asking this question to, you know, all my guests on the show. You've gone through this journey, almost a decade of being a founder, more than a decade, if you count your previous stints. I'm sure being in that role influences you as a person over time and it changes your personality over time. So if you had to, you know, look back, reflect, how has, you know, being a founder for the last 12, 13 years influenced your personality over the years?
I think you do mature faster. I think a lot of decisions that you take in your personal life, you try and use frameworks that you have learned in your journey. I think it's that kind of maturity as a personality. You will stop taking everything is now more quantitative in terms of, you know, just more analytical, every decision making, which is good and bad both, I think. But yes, as individual, you change, you mature. Even you try and put your personal life, your house into a financial system. Everything is running the same way as you run your company. So yeah, that changes you. But you also grow up faster because the amount of exposure and the amount of world you see outside, the people you meet, the knowledge you get, it's a much faster learning. than folks who are in their own isolated system and do not get to network as much. The good part about our ecosystem is we get to meet. There are so many events, networking sessions, and investors. While raising money, you meet 100 people. Eventually, one you convince. But in that journey, every individual teaches you something. So, of course, there's a lot of knowledge that you acquire over time that makes you a better operator for your future stints. There's a lot of mistakes that you do in your journey that you makes you a better operator for your future stints. I think that's how you change as an individual. You might have, I think you've done your MBA a few 1,000 times in your journey.
I love that. Awesome, Vishesh. You know, with that, we'll jump into our final segment, the rapid fire. I'll shoot some questions and, you know, hope to get your honest, immediate thoughts on the same.
Sure.
Okay. One thing that you'd like to change to improve the state of the Indian startup ecosystem today?
I think nothing. It's at the best it can get. I think that's nothing.
You're being too generous here, Vishesh.
No, I think we have the right leadership. Everything is doing. I don't see anything right now that is not going to happen. Unfortunately, that's the answer.
All right. Fair. If you had to give a TED talk, what topic would you choose and why?
Why you should at least try once in your life to be an entrepreneur. That's what I would do.
And why do you think that's an important topic for you to talk about?
Because I think a lot of people do not know their own capabilities till they go ahead and do it. So I think the idea is that everyone is capable. I think it's just that taking that decision, taking that one plunge. I think everyone should try it. No matter you fail or do it, that's okay. But what it will teach you will make you a better individual for whatever career you have in your life.
Awesome. Well said, Vishesh. And, you know, look forward to that TED talk whenever we get to listen to that. Okay. Last question. Founders and investors from the ecosystem that you admire and look up to.
I think a few founders, of course, in Indian ecosystem, a few founders, a company that I really admire is Zerodha, how they have actually executed and built what they have. It's a pure example of how things should be done. Yeah, and the other company, I think, on how India can go global, a couple of companies like Zoho and Freshworks, they've actually proven how best they can go global and also work. So yeah, those are a few things that really how they have done what they've done.
And anyone on the investor side that you would like to mention from the ecosystem?
From the ecosystem, it won't be fair to pick one name. And from where we stand, it's just not fair to actually pick one investor.
Okay. Fair enough, Vishesh. We'll give that to you. Thanks again, you know, for taking out the time. Really enjoyed the conversation. I've learned a lot, and I'm sure a lot of aspiring founders, investors listening to this will have a lot of takeaways, just like me. So thanks again for doing this.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode of the VCpreneur podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please let our guests know about it and share your thoughts on social media. We would truly appreciate if you could subscribe to our podcast on the podcast platform of your choice and leave us a review on Spotify or Apple iTunes. This will help others discover the podcast. To get more insights and learn about startups and venture capital, you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram. We would love to hear from you there. You can find all our episodes together on our website, thevcpreneur.com. We will be back again next time with another VCpreneur that is making a dent in the venture universe. Until then, take care and keep shining.